Garrett Ilsen here, your celeb expert and your celeb savant. Celeb Savant is a weekly entertainment show. We have long-form career retrospective type interviews with celebrities, singers, actors, and industry experts. On this episode of Celeb Savant, I'll be speaking to Brad Marquis. Brad Marquis is an American R&B singer, songwriter, and soul powerhouse. Brad released his debut album, Finding My Way, in 2007, and since then has consistently released singles, albums, and EPs. He's a veteran performer, headlining his own shows and sharing the stage with the likes of Eric Robertson, Angie Stone, Faith Evans, India Re, Tamia, to name just a few. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Brad Marquis. Where do we find you in the world? What's happening in your life? And how are you doing?
Where do you find me in the world?
Yes.
I'm at home. Yeah. I'm in New Jersey. I actually live in Jersey in the States. How am I doing? I'm doing great, man. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. This new year has hit the ground running. And I'm excited about all the beautiful things that I'm projecting for this year.
I like that, because projecting means there's intention and that it will manifest. So let's put it out there. That
absolutely.
Perfect.
Absolutely.
So let's take it all the way back to the very beginning of your musical journey. When did you realize that music was where you wanted to go? And how did that journey take place?
I was about 19 years old. I was in college and I did a talent show. And it wasn't just the talent show. It was everything around the talent show. It was how I got there. And I'll try and shorten this story, but
that's fine.
I really wasn't doing music at the time. I was just a college student, you know, who could sing. And so, you know, one of my hooks is, you know, I would sing for the ladies, you know, so if I'm, you know, that was just my thing.
Can I just ask you a question around that? Because a lot of people, they just sing without actually realizing that they've got a song to sing with for lots of people. So when you were singing those songs for the ladies, did you think it was just for that moment, or did you actually understand that you had a talent for the world to hear?
No, I was just singing just because I could. there wasn't much intention behind it. Was to get them, you know, get their attention, or maybe I just sing without even knowing that I was singing, just because it's just what I did, you know. And so that's kind of where that was. Mm-hmm. But I was at a talent show, and it was a talent show / fashion show, and they had more fashion skits than they had talent. And so I knew the host and the hostess, and they, you know, during one of the intermissions, they came to me and asked me if I would close out the night. And I was like, absolutely not. I'm just, you know, I'm here with my friends. We're hanging out. I had no intention on singing. It was 500 people there. I had no intention on getting up there. I was ill prepared, you know. So I was just like, nah, you know, move on, blah, blah, blah. And they wouldn't move on. As I said, they were the host and the hostess. So they're on stage and they're hinting at a special guest coming up at the end of the night. He's not on the brochure. He's not in, you know, he's not on the bill. But we have a special guest for you at the end of the night. And next thing I know, friends of mine throughout the night would come over to me, Brad, we heard you singing. And I was like, no, I'm not singing. I'm absolutely not singing.
That's very naughty of them to do that.
right. Yeah. And I was about to get up and leave. Mm. And then, you know, one of my friends who I was interested in at the time, and I was trying to date her, she was like, there's no way you're going to sing for me in class and not get up and sing now. And I'm like, homie, that's just you. It is 500 people here. So the end of the night comes. I'm dead set against performing. Next thing I know, the lights go out in the theater. Yes. The lights go off. Spotlight hits me in the crowd. Why?
I'm sure you wanted to crawl under something at that moment.
Why? So this is the sink or swim moment. Either you get up and sing, or you never sing ever again in your life.
Yeah.
And so I got up and I sang. And the crowd roared to it. It was deafening. It was so loud. It was deafening. Like I couldn't hear anything. I couldn't even hear their cheers. It was so loud. And I walked off the stage, and the host and hostess grabbed me and said, Brad, turn around. Look, that's for you. And I turned around, my ears opened up, and I could hear it. And I was like, oh, shit, I can do this. I was like, this might be my thing. And after that, it just kind of snowballed. Folks started recruiting me, wanting me to come and be in their group or want me to come to the studio and record songs, stuff like that. And it just snowballed.
So you mentioned you've collaborated with different artists and groups and so forth. So currently, is it a solo project? I know you're doing covers of Sam Cooke, but is the production collaboration just yourself or still a collaboration of mixed different individuals?
Currently, it's been majority of me. I've probably written almost 100% of my songs. I've probably written 95% of my songs since I started releasing albums in 2007. I have 3 albums and an EP out right now. I have another, as you said, you know, I covered a Bob Dylan, Sam Cooke song, Blowing in the Wind. After that, with the permission of the estate, hopefully we can put the project out because it's a whole live album of Sam Cooke material that we taken from one of my performances. I'm just excited for that and excited to produce new music, hopefully sometime in the second half of this year.
Your music, your creative process from zero to a 3 to 4 minute song, vocal instrumentation. What is that journey for you?
It's changed over the years, but I think the best version of me in that space came when on my first album. And my first album was created, and I've always wanted to get back to this creative process. My first album, I met my partner and still great friend to this day, Jeremy Cochise Ball. And he was one of the best engineers in the city of New York. He was a producer, but he was known for his engineering. And production was good, but his engineering was his claim. And so we lived together in New York. When I first met him, we probably just communicated, talked, shared stories, shared life for about 30 days. We didn't record not one song for 30 days. He got to know me. I got to know him. And then one day I came to the studio and he had 3 songs tracked out already, 3 instrumentals tracked out already. And he said, you know, Brad, I want you to hear something. And I said, you know what? Do not let me hear it. I was like, dim the lights. Give me the headphones. Because I just want to, whatever I hear, I just want it to be organic. And I want to turn on the microphone. And whatever comes out is going to come out. We got 3 songs in like 10 minutes.
Wow.
One of the songs, actually, let me take that back. 2 of the songs from top to bottom. The whole song, hook, bridge, all that. We got everything from top to bottom. We went in, we didn't change a thing. We didn't change any vocals. We didn't change a thing. All we did was go in and just stack the vocals. We stacked the hook, made the hook big and everything, you know, put the background vocals under it, all of that stuff. Those 3 songs are on my first album, Finding My Way.
Okay.
And you wouldn't know they were freestyle. You would think they were written out on paper, all of that stuff. Yep. So, but I say that all as to say, I love the idea of just communing with someone and you understand them, they understand you, and then it's just you organically start producing the same type of music. Mm-hmm. You know, because I didn't produce at the time as far as music was concerned. I was just writing at the time. But to be able to him to understand my heart and create music that spoke to the experiences that I was having at that time was amazing to me. And I always wanted to get back to that. I want to get back to having that kind of relationship with a producer and being able to pull out some of those things in me that maybe at the time I don't have words for, or maybe at the time I can't find the music for, you know, and it just organic, and we just build it out of nothingness.
Those moments when you got behind the mic and you heard that instrumentation and all the words just came out free flowing, as mentioned, once you had finished, was it like, okay, what just happened? Or, yeah, what was that process like? It's so interesting for me to hear that. It was like, often the mind needs to think and plan and create and write and allow things to, you know, flow. And sometimes people think that can't happen in the moment. It needs to be planned. So obviously it wasn't planned. So tell me about that experience.
I like to think, I don't like to think I know this. I know this because it happened on my 3rd album as well. Mm-hmm. So I know this. I'm just because I'm not writing, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I got writer's block, or I'm still having experiences.
Yes.
I'm still living life. I'm still banking experiences within my soul, within my mind, within my heart. I'm still banking experiences. And I feel there's a moment where those experiences want to come out. And this happened on my 3rd album. A lot of the songs that I had written nonstop for about 2 years, from 3 years, 2006 through 2009, I had written nonstop. And I just had hundreds of songs. And then I couldn't write a thing from like 2009 all the way until 2012. I couldn't write a thing. Then I ran into another old friend, a producer of mine, and he sent me a song and he asked me to write a song for him. So I wrote the song and he loved it so much that he sent me a whole website full of music that he produced. And he hadn't put anything out in 8 years.
Okay.
He hadn't been producing music, done anything for 8 years. And he sent me, he's like, Brad, whatever you want, just take it. I literally wrote 10 songs in 5 days.
Okay.
Ten complete songs in 5 days. 8 of them made my third album. But all those experiences, lived in me and they were ready to come out, and I feel like we're here. I feel like I'm here again. I put a EP out in 2020, and I wrote about 3 songs. Some of those songs are older, 3 of them were new, but I haven't put together a body of work since 2013. And here we are almost 10 years later, 9 years later. And I feel like the experiences I've had over the last 9 years, they're ready to come out.
The question around that period where you didn't write song for 3 years, did you try and it was just not, it just was like,
it was terrible. I tried and it was terrible.
Okay.
I didn't like anything that I was putting on paper. I didn't, it may have been good to other people, but it wasn't good to me. I wasn't writing anything that I hadn't already written. I didn't write anything that was moving me or that I felt was going to be a contribution to society. Contribution to the music industry. It was just words on paper, or I didn't feel like it did anything. So if I wasn't moved by it, why am I going to continue trying? I don't want to force it. I have to love it. Mm-hmm. I have to believe in it. And when I believe in it, then I can sell it. I can perform it. I can get behind it. But if it's just something that I feel like, where I can't tell if it's good or not, and I got to look at other people's responses, I don't like that feeling.
Those songs you wrote pre to that time, you mentioned you wrote a number of songs. So you have you ever gone back to those songs and like, okay, let's make an album out of some of those songs?
That was the EP I put out.
Okay, understood.
The EP, I took 3 of those songs and put them on my EP. Three or four.
Okay.
Because the world hadn't heard them. And they were actually literally 3 of my favorite songs that I ever written. But they didn't have a space on the projects that I had previously put out. But so they did fit the theme of the EP.
Okay, understood. I just want to unpack that because I find this quite interesting. You wrote solidly for 2 to 3 years. And then was it an overnight shift and just felt, okay, I'd released everything I had to release for that period. And now trying to release more is forcing it?
Yeah, it was forcing it. I didn't have a reason behind releasing. Like I said, a lot of the songs that I was writing were reminding me of songs that I had already written, but they weren't as good. I probably needed more, in hindsight, just needed more maturity, more growth, more experiences.
So there's a period of not writing. Did you just let it flow and just let it happen and say, okay, it's not happening right now? Or was there frustration around that?
Oh, frustration.
Okay.
Absolutely. I felt something was wrong with me because I couldn't write anymore. I could write, like, if someone came along and said, Brad, I need a song like this. Can you write this for me? I could do that. But I just couldn't write for myself. I needed more experience in life. I needed a purpose, like my why. And I didn't have a why. And just putting out new music wasn't good enough for me, especially if I have to sell it, if I have to get behind it and I have to, convince someone else to like it the way I do. If I don't like it, how can I convince you to like it?
Yeah. And then people would eventually see through that facade. So, completely.
Absolutely. But if I buy into it, I don't care if you like it or not. I'm still going to push it to you.
Exactly. And that energy comes through. Passion.
That energy comes through. Yes,
exactly.
It does.
You mentioned you did a live performance or staging of Sam Cooke. Why him specifically?
It found me. Sam Cooke found me. So I'm honored in that way. I was coming off an acting residency, and I didn't want to look for any more jobs. I didn't want to audition. I didn't want to wait in line. I didn't want to do all that. So I decided to create my own show, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. Okay. And I was sitting at a friend's house and she said, Brad, you remind me of Sam Cooke, physically. And that wasn't the first time I had heard that. So she ended up giving me a book, Dream Boogie, the autobiography of Sam Cooke. And I read it from cover to cover a couple of times, absolutely loved the story and saw so much of myself in it and saw a lot of what I wanted to do moving forward in his story. And so I immersed myself in everything Sam Cooke for about 3 months. I had his speech down. I had his inflections, his mannerisms. His, okay. I had it all down. And I did a show. I did a show in 2009 juxtaposing Sam Cooke and my life to that point. The show has, it sold out. The first one sold out. And I've done, you know, four, five, six different iterations of that show over the last 10, 15 years and, until here. And here we are with our latest rendition of the show. And it's just grown. It's just gotten bigger. It's gotten bigger. And we've added more to it. You know, it went from an hour show to now it's a 2 hour show.
Wow.
You know, it went to from a 5-piece band to now a 10-piece band, you know, with all the bells and whistles. And, you know, it went from me just singing his songs. And now I sing his songs and I tell not just his story, but the story of that era.
That's interesting. Yeah.
You know, and his impact on that and the era's impact on him. We immerse you in when you close those doors, you are back in the late 50s, early 60s.
Wow.
From the look to all the imagery we use to, you know, just everything just kind of takes you back to that time.
It sounds amazing. I definitely want to see that sometime as soon as I can. Before we had vinyls, CDs, cassettes. They are gratefully making a comeback because I love me a CD. I love holding the thing, looking at your pictures, looking at the thank yous. But we've got these digital platforms where people consume music these days. What are your thoughts around that and the changes?
It's double-edged sword. The access is beautiful. You know, the ability to be able to market and, you know, promote and sell directly to your fan base is absolutely amazing. You know, the opportunity to build and grow your own fan base organically via the internet and touch the world is absolutely amazing. But I feel like it has stripped the industry, stripped music of a lot of its foundation and its culture. A lot of what I loved about it when I first started doing music was the community and collaboration that was built, having to be in the studio with somebody to produce a record. I can do my part in my house, you can do your part at your house, and we never have to be in the same space. You know, we never have to collaborate on that in that way. I miss being able, you know, when I had to build my fan base early on, I had to go from show to show to show to show, from event to event. I was forced to be into the battleground. I say the battleground is I had to get on stage and work out my stage show, you know, in front of people, you know, so like, whether it was good, bad or indifferent, you know, I was working my stage show out on smaller levels. And then as I got better, the stages got bigger. There were so many wonderful human beings that I met along that journey. And I think a lot of that gets missed now. Mm-hmm. Because I can produce a whole album and put it out and you never have to see me. Yeah. You know, you see me on YouTube or IG, but you never have to see me perform.
It's interesting you say that because I've had such a realization because not seeing you and seeing you on YouTube and Instagram is part of the inverted commas, whether that people use it or not, the filtered world. So it's playing to a character or a person, what they want to perceive. But when we see the real you, we see the real you. So
you see the, yes.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things to say is you're butt naked on that stage. I don't care how many clothes you got on.
Exactly.
You are butt naked on that stage. People can see you and your intentions when you're on that stage.
That's so interesting because so many people now like, oh, I can chat to my fans on Instagram. I can DM them. And I'm like, okay, cool. It couldn't be done before, but I don't know. There's a whole mystery of the music journey that's been taken away.
And it's been taken away, yeah.
Yeah, like for me, I still, like I said, I still buy the CDs. Okay, this month, I'm going to buy this one. I get it delivered. I open the box, all excited. I look at the pictures. I look at the song words. That whole experience and the journey of I'm saying thank you to you as a musician by investing in this has been taken away for a lot of people. But I want to tell you, gratefully, vinyls in the UK had the best selling in 2022 since 1990. So the physical is making a comeback, which is great.
No, that is absolutely great. It's funny. I partnered with Soul Japan and I put out vinyl over there through Soul Japan.
Okay.
So that was, it was an EP. It was a love EP, actually. It's funny because it was a song called The One You Love and a song called Love. I released those in the UK first. On vinyl. And those songs actually ended up making it on my EP that I released here in the States. But it was released on vinyl in the UK years before that.
the podcast is listened to throughout the world. So my main listening audience is in the UK, USA, Australia, and a bunch of other countries. But grateful to all of you for listening. So as a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
Well, I just want to say thank you for listening and thank you for this, you know, your wonderful questions, man. You know, you really dug into that. And I appreciate you taking me back down memory lane in that way. You know, if you want to find out about Brad Marquis, it's very easy. Everything is BraddMarquis. So, you know, if you check any musical platform, social media, whatever, check out that name, website, whatever. You know, that's the same. Everything's the same. So you don't have to do too much guessing.
Brilliant. So, guys, this is Celeb Savant signing out with Brad Marquis.